Hello, this is Chris English with the third of the August editions of At Home This Morning, a magazine programme that we hope will provide you with a look at our world, both in and around the city of Brighton and Hove, and a little further afield, all for both our older listeners and those not so old, plus, of course, some music to help things along. In this programme, there'll be a review of the latest musical theatre offering from Brighton Theatre Group, which, complete with Flying Car, took the Theatre Royal by storm earlier this month. We'll have news on a new Safety On and In the Water campaign from the Royal National Lifeboat Institution from Brighton Station Manager Roger Cohen. And we'll be hearing from local history manager Nicola Benge about her search for people who have memories of our local hospitals, plus a detailed look at how you can spot a scammer who's after your savings. But to start things off, we welcome Honey Lancaster James and Nicola Parrish to tell us all about the risks of scammers. Firstly, Nicola, please tell us if these people really are a problem.
It is a problem because we know that up to 40% of people across the UK are at risk of falling victim to a pension scam. So it's really important that we are out and about urging savers to get to know the signs of a scam so that they don't part with their hard-earned pension.
And how can you find out if it's a scam and not just a good deal?
There are some really obvious common tactics which it would be really important for people to be aware of. So, for example, a pension's cold call, a call out of the blue asking to talk to you about your pension or even a text or an email. If that happens, put the phone down, delete the email, walk away, don't get involved. There are other signs as well. For example, an offer of a free pensions review. That, again, is a sign that you're dealing with a potential scam. A guarantee of high returns. Offers of unusual or exotic investments, a promise that you can unlock your pension tax-free under 55, and, of course, the time pressure, the one where people are told, hand over your money, you can get this great deal now, but you've got to do it very quickly. These are all signs that you're dealing with a scam, and people should be alert to that. If they're approached on one of these bases, just to get onto the website, get onto the Scam Smart website and check who you're dealing with before you hand over a penny of your money.
Now, a lot of people think, oh, it'll never happen to me. Is that a false sense of security?
Yes, I would say so. I mean, as a psychologist, one of the things that I've sort of got used to over the years is that actually, you know, no one is immune to being scammed, whether you are among the most intelligent, most competent, most savvy people can fall prey, because scammers use really sophisticated psychological techniques to sort of reel you in very gradually at first. And initially, you know, some of the tactics that Nicola was talking about there can seem really quite innocent. I mean, if someone said, look, you know, we just want to talk to you about your pension, or we just want to give you a free review, you don't have to give us your credit card details or anything like that, people will think, oh, well, what's the harm? What's the risk? It seems very low risk. But unfortunately, people don't realise that these things. So I didn't realise, for example, that just calling you up and asking to talk to you about your pension is already sort of breaking the law. You can't do that. That's not allowed. So that's a red flag straight away. But one of the things that scammers do is they play around with and they break the normal social rules of etiquette that you or I will just follow naturally. So if I call you up and I say, are you having a nice day, for example, so far, for example, you would be sort of, you know, in normal polite society, you'd be inclined to say, oh, yes, thank you. But actually, this is one of the ways they start to get you their foot in the door, and they get you to say yes to something very small, and then you might be saying yes to something else. And what we know psychologically is that after two or three times of saying yes to something very innocuous, when they then put to you, oh, would you like us to come out and, you know, do a pension review, or would you like to send us your details, for example, you're much more inclined to say yes because you've been pre-primed to do that. So this is just one of the psychological techniques that they use. And if you're being bombarded with lots of techniques at once, even if you are very intelligent and very savvy, you're likely to fall prey to that. And I think one of the things that have come out of this survey, which was commissioned by the Financial Conduct Authority and the pension regulator under this Scam Smart campaign, is that what they did was they surveyed thousands of people, more than 2,000 people, and they put to them a number of different scenarios. You know, would you do this? Or, you know, what if this happened? What would you do? And what they found was that even those people who said, no, I really don't think I would be scammed, I'm really quite savvy, or I'm really quite alert, they were just as likely to fall prey to some of those common tactics. So I think that was really, really important that came out of this survey.
Is it just everybody, or is it older people more at risk?
I think anybody can be a victim of a scam, of a pension scam, but we do know that that age group, 45 to 65, are probably a prime picking ground, if you like, for the scammers. So they are ones who should be particularly alert to this. But, of course, scammers don't care who they prey on or how many lives they wreck in the process of getting their hands on your pension funds. And I think for everybody, if you ignore the warning signs of scams, then you do risk losing all your savings.
I think one of the things you could do to test that theory as well is the Scam Smart campaign have launched this little quiz, and it's quite a fun quiz. It's sort of six short questions. It puts some scenarios to you and you can answer what you would do. And I think you'll find there it's quite surprising. I did it myself yesterday and I'd like to think myself quite intelligent, but it is quite surprising those kinds of things that catch you out. So one of the things I would definitely recommend is if you go to the Financial Conduct Authority website and look for the Scam Smart, which is at fca.org.uk/scamsmart. You can take the quiz. You can find out all about the six common tactics they use, find out more about the survey. And it's just a really great way of educating yourself. And I think that's what this is all about. It's about being aware of what are the red flags, what are the tactics that they're going to use.
I was just going to say that was exactly right, honey. And I would just add on to that, that what we would like people to do is to be able to feel very confident in just rejecting any unexpected offers about their pension. Check, as honey said, the Scam Smart website. Make sure they're not being rushed. They don't have to rush. They can take their time in making these decisions and seriously consider taking advice from an FCA authorised advisor.
And if somebody believes they might have been scammed or in the process of being scammed, what should they do?
Exactly that. So check who they're dealing with. Point number one, go onto the Scam Smart website, check out who you're dealing with, and make sure that if you are thinking about doing anything with your pension, you deal with an FCA authorised advisor.
I think also what Nicola was saying about anybody who puts you under time pressure, that is a classic technique. It's actually designed to make you feel slightly anxious, so that when you're slightly anxious, you're less likely to think things through carefully and to look at the small print. And so anybody who ever says to you, and this goes across the board, anyone who ever says, look, you know, I really want you to take time to think about this, but just to let you know, this offer is going to close down in 24 hours or something like that, or 2 days, that is a huge red flag. Because when it comes to your pensions in particular, but any financial decision you make, you really should be put in a position where you feel able to take as long as you need. And if anybody is trying to put the time pressure on you, just walk away, put the phone down, get away as quickly as you can.
So it's not just pensions, it's any financial.
Well, I think so. But I think definitely when it comes to your pensions, it's those kinds of things where, you know, one of the things that we have at the moment is across the board, people are generally worried about the state of their pensions. And one of the things that came out of the survey was that those people who were, looking for ways to maximise their pension funds or to improve their futures, were actually far more susceptible to some of the scammers' tactics. And that's because when you are already a little bit anxious and you are already worried about your financial future, that's when you're going to be more open to some of those offers and the things that sound great. You know, when someone sort of calls you up and says, look, you know, we're all investing in our future and we've got this great new sustainability project or an environmental environmental project abroad or something like that, and you think this plays into your psychology that makes you want to think, well, yes, I'm environmentally conscious and I'm keen to be sustainable in the future. And so you think it's a great thing to put your money in, but actually this is not an appropriate area to be dealing with your pension.
Honey and Nicola, thank you very much. But just before you go, can you give us those contact details for the website again?
Yep, it's fca.org.uk/scamsmart.
We're hearing from psychologist Honey Lancaster-James and Executive Director of the Pensions Regulator, Nicola Parrish, with news on those scammers that can literally ruin people's lives. As is regrettably usual for this time of year, our news has recently been full of either fatal tragedies or near misses involving the water. And that's prompted the Royal National Lifeboat Institution to launch a new campaign for those of us who enjoy being in, on or under the water. To find out more, I went along to the Brighton Lifeboat Station, where in a rather echoey room, manager Roger Cohen explains what the new campaign is all about.
But visitors to our coast, they need to know some basic skills to make sure that when they enter water, they equally come out.
And is that something that's a problem for lifeboat crews?
Well, some of our casualties never intended to enter the water, and therefore there's a situation where they could be thrashing around in the water waiting for someone to turn up to rescue them, and they can use a technique called float to live to increase that chance of them being rescued in a timely fashion.
So what is float to live?
Float to live is rather than thrash around in the water, that you lay back, relax, take a deep breath, and once you've calmed yourself down, then perhaps swim or go for rescue. When you enter the water, is you get cold water shock and you open your mouth and you ingest water, and then it'll be a downward spiral. But if you can take that moment to calm yourself down, there may be a better chance of survival.
It's easier said than done, though, isn't it? Calm yourself down, you fall in the water, and maybe it's dark. Maybe you're in unfamiliar surroundings, or even the sea's rough. Are there some simple tricks?
I've never been in that situation, but there are some evidenced persons who have used a float-to-live technique in their life today, where they've learnt the simple message of float-to-live, and they've used that technique and have survived.
On the wider aspect of the RNLI here at Brighton, how are things generally? Are things changing in the modern world?
Yes, I mean, we get some more incidents to people rather than traditional boats. The seafarers are still out there in their yachts and their boats breaking down, but more and more we're getting tasked to people in the water or people near the water.
And a message for visitors and locals alike?
Know your coastline. The Brighton Hove is well policed by the Brighton Hove City Lifeguards. Swim between the yellow and red flags. If the red flag up, that is for your assurance that the sea could be rough and it could be on the competent swimmer to be in that sea. We have a steeply shelving beach, and the shingle can be quite liquid. So I wouldn't encourage you to go near the waves, especially like a windy day today. There's that as waves can unfortunately suck you into the...
So generally, the life of Brighton Lifeboat continues. And what boat have you got at the moment?
Brighton's still got the Atlanta 85 class lifeboat. It's been the current boat that's been with us since 2011. It will be coming up for probably a replacement in 2021. It's served as well. It's been going 50, 60, 70 shouts per year, so it's a hard work lifeboat, but the volunteers and the maintainers look after the lifeboat well and keep it tip top.
I mean, it always looks immaculate. How much maintenance do you have to do?
Every time the boat goes out, it comes back and has a wash down with soapy water. If there's any defects on it, then we will try to repair those as we can. but we have a volunteer doing weekly maintenance on it, and then we have some professional maintainers come down on six monthly basis to do additional maintenance.
And they come from RI headquarters?
That's right, yes. There's a fleet of mechanics and technicians who visit each lifeboat station to do some maintenance over and above the weekly checks.
The phone ringing, was it an emergency call on this occasion?
No, we work in close cooperation with the lifeguard patrol boat, and they just want to use our cradle for a bit of weekly maintenance on their own boat. And the lifeboat crew are employed by Brighton City Council, so it's a win for them and a win for us.
That's excellent. And the new lifeboat station at Brighton Marina, you're settled in now?
Yeah, it's going well. We've got an open day on September the 1st, so if the public wishes to come down and see us, we're open between 11 and 4 p.m. The crew will be here, they can see the kit room, they can go downstairs to see the boat and get some key water safety messages from us and some of our partners.
And so, when is that again?
Sunday, September the 1st at Brighton Lifeboat Station, which is down at the end of the boardwalk at Brighton Marina.
Right, and the boardwalk is where the restaurants and shops are?
That's right, on the west side of the Brighton Marina.
And is there a charge for that?
No charge. It's a free, it's a charity. If you wish to donate, I'm sure there'll be a collecting box somewhere.
Talking about money, we're also always conscious of the fact that the lifeboat exists on donations and bequests. How important is that?
It is important. I mean, I'm conscious that there's finite resources out there, and a lot of the lifeboat service is through legacies. Will legacies still continue in the new world? There's competing charities, but we are one of the nation's favourite charities, and long may that live.
And how much does it cost to run a station like Brighton?
I don't know the individual costs for this lifeboat station, but it costs £163 million to run the RLI in the UK and Ireland, over 238 lifeboat stations and the various support centres that support the coast.
And where does that money come from?
That money comes from coffee mornings, from legacies, from sponsorship, from companies, etc.
So there's no government funding at all?
No government funding whatsoever.
And what about the Coast Guard? Because the Coast Guard is a government operation.
We work closely with the Coast Guard. There's volunteer Coast Guard teams at Shoreham and New Haven that we work on a weekly basis. And then there's the Coast Guard office down in Fareham in Portsmouth.
And so they call you, don't they?
They will call the closest search and rescue asset to the incident. And if it's Brighton Lifeboat Station, yes, they will page me. And then I have a conversation with the Coast Guard as to whether that we're going to launch Brighton Lifeboat to that incident.
Looking at lifeboats in and around the Sussex coast, there are quite a lot. And there have been talk in the past of rationalising the number of lifeboats. Will that affect Brighton if it happens?
Every 5 years, the RLI a coastal review of their assets in the area. So they will come down and visit me, visit New Haven Lifeboat Station, say, we've looked at your statistics, we look at your boat. Have you got the right unit for this area? And yes, in some areas of the country, they've removed lifeboats. But Brighton is a busy lifeboat station. There's no risk to Brighton lifeboat being taken away.
Going back to water safety, what are the vital messages that listeners should take on board?
Read the signage, speak to locals. If you're visiting for the first time Brighton or Cornwall, then there are beaches that have got signage of where to swim, what the dangers are, and if you are in trouble, where to ring.
And finally, that open day, what can people see and where is it and when is it again?
It's Sunday, September the 1st, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. You can meet the crew, see the boat, speak to fire and rescue, speak to the local Coast Guard team, and hopefully the weather will be on our side.
We're hearing from the RLI's Brighton Station Manager, Roger Cohen, about keeping safe on or near the water. Now, amazingly, a lot of people in this country couldn't tell you where the Isle of Wight is. Joining us now on the telephone is Alice Teacake, travel blogger and influencer. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Tell me, is that true? It seems rather far-fetched as we live on the South Coast.
Yeah, so it is in fact true. Premier Inn recently did some research and it actually turns out that over half of Brits, 58% to be exact, actually couldn't point to the Isle of Wight on the map. You know, and especially for Brighton, it's so close that it's such a shame that this island is not getting the recognition that it deserves.
I mean, it's truly amazing, but it's not just the Isle of Wight, is it, this survey? It's people don't reckon we live on an island for a start.
Yeah, that's actually true. So Premier Inn actually found that 71% of Brits do not even consider themselves as an island, as an islander, and 8% have never even heard of any of the islands that we possess. Do you actually know how many British Isles we have?
No, tell me.
So the actual amount is 187. So there's 187 opportunities out there to really go exploring. And yeah, a lot of people do not realise how many there actually are.
That's amazing. That's truly amazing. Can you name some, put you on the spot, can you name some of the ones other than the Isle of Wight, of course?
Yeah, absolutely. So depending on what you're looking for and where you are located in the UK, you might be more inclined to go for one over the other. But I would say, like, to start out, obviously the Isle of Wight is what we've mentioned, but if you want to go further south, then we've got the Channel Islands in between Britain and France, and that is Jersey and Guernsey. They are absolutely brilliant for the ice cream, the beaches, and there's excellent cycling spots there. And also, you know, if you're really looking for adventures, we've got coast steering and rock climbing. So that's a great start if you're looking to go more down south. But if you're more interested in the north, then the Isle of Man, right between England and Ireland, is a great bet. And then right at the top, obviously, we've got all those beautiful islands up in Scotland, which is, you know, such a rugged and beautiful place to explore. So there's plenty of options to choose from.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just incredible that the whole thing is thrown up, that people don't recognise an island when they see it. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's for a number of reasons, really. Maybe, you know, way back studying geography, it just wasn't simply pointed out to us. But also in terms of travel trends, you know, 70s and the 80s, we just automatically kind of got on a long-haul flight and flew over to Spain, or, you know, when people are thinking about having a bit of a party, they might go straight to Ibiza. So I think these, you know, these ideas was what people automatically went to. But people are starting to cotton on that there is a lot more on our doorstep that we don't know about. And we're starting to see this rise in midi breaks. So people aren't exactly staying right in their like local area for a staycation. They're kind of thinking, I want to explore what is on my doorstep. Where can I go? Which is just a little bit of a hop, skip and a jump. And this is where the midi break comes in. We're not leaving the country completely, but we are kind of going across waters to explore what's out there.
And how easy is it to get to some of these places?
Well, it's definitely a lot easier than it used to be. We are finding now that there's a lot more airport and plane options, obviously, especially for the Isle of Wight. I think people think, how am I going to get there? But it's so easy. Just literally pop to the port and then you can go straight across on the ferry and you're there very quickly. And then, you know, once you're on the island, then you can easily grab the bus or take a car and you're on your way.
And what about those islands off of Scotland? That's a bit more difficult, isn't it?
Not necessarily. I mean, I have been up there myself and have been enjoying it very easily. I think this is the thing, you know, with Premier Inn, they are opening up hotels all the time. And, you know, when we want to go somewhere, we're worried about how we're going to get there, where are we going to stay, and what facilities are there. And, I found, especially for the Isle of Man, for example, that what we need and what we require is there. It's definitely out there. It's not too much hassle or stress. You should definitely consider the British Isles for your next holiday.
And of course, a lot of people will say, well, the weather's not so good, whereas if we go to the continent, we're guaranteed sun and sangria, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, in response to that, I would say that actually the Channel Islands, again, are your best bet, and why not go down there? In Guernsey, for example, spring arrived 4 weeks earlier than on the mainland. So if you are chasing those warmer climates and the sun, then the Channel Islands are a great bet, a really beautiful holiday.
Generally, do you think we're too insular in our approach to travel?
I really hope not. I think, you know, as people become just more aware of what is out there, then it's going to seem a lot easier for them to take that step and go there. You know, I think Brits are discovering what is right on their doorstep, and that really is a joy to see. We are understanding now that there's so much variety out there, and it's possible to get there.
And all on our doorstep at home.
Absolutely. Yeah, over 187 choices, and we're absolutely spoiled.
And how many of those can you name off the top of your head?
A great question. Obviously, I can't do all 187, but I say Isle of Man, and then Mersey Island in Essex. We've got Herne, which is just a day trip from Guernsey. One of my favourites in Scotland is the Isle of Islay. It's particularly famous for its whiskey. And the Aran Islands also come to mind in Ireland. They are absolutely beautiful, I have to say. If you are planning a holiday in Ireland, you are really spoilt for choice there. And every island has its own character and quirkiness and little culture, and it's such a joy to see.
Alice, thank you very much for joining us, and more fun on your islands.
Thank you so much.
Alice Teacake was keeping us informed on the number of islands there are around our coast. And the answer to that, incidentally, is 187. Now, not an island, but just along the coast, is Shoreham. And Richard, you've got some information on an event coming up.
Yes, that's right. If you heard the last edition of At Home this morning, you'll remember that we broadcast an interview with Colin Johnson, who was talking about how he creates new formats for TV quiz shows. Well, Colin's been in touch with me to tell me that on Tuesday, September the 3rd, he'll be running his annual big quiz at the Rope Tackle Arts Centre in Shoreham. He describes it as a light-hearted quiz about films, although he stresses you don't need to be a film buff to have fun. It includes lots of clips from much-loved movies, and one of the innovations this year is that it includes guest appearances on the big screen from local celebrities.
Wow, sounds like an event not to be missed.
It does, doesn't it? And Colin says anybody can take part. You compete in teams of four, but you don't necessarily have to make up your own team. You're welcome to come in ones and twos, and they'll fit you into one. However, you do need to get tickets in advance, which cost £12 each. To find out more, or to book tickets, you can go to their webpage at ropetacklecentre.co.uk/whats-on. That's Rope Tackle Centre, typed all as one word, .co.uk/whats-on. When you get there, scroll down to Tuesday, September the 3rd, and there you'll find the event. It's called Let's Get Quizzical 4, and there's a button you can click to book tickets and get further information. Alternatively, you can phone the Rope Tackle Arts Centre on Brighton 464 440. That's 01273 464 440. Or, of course, you can visit their box office. They're open Monday to Saturday between 10 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. But they're closed on Sundays and bank holidays. By the way, Colin tells me that they have the most wonderful finger buffet with a host of different canapés, half of which are vegetarian. You definitely don't need to eat first. And I almost forgot to say that the event starts at 7:30 p.m. Colin says that the quiz is a substantial fundraiser for an arts centre that needs support.
And the Rope Tackle is something I've seen it advertised. I've never been there. Have you ever been?
I've been to one or two things there. It's right in the middle of Shoreham, just on the roundabout, just before the bridge that goes over the Ada. And it's a big modern building. You can't miss it, really.
Right. It sounds like something we ought to investigate.
I think so, yes. We'll do something more about it in the future programme.
Something to look forward to there, I think. And you'll remember that we've been talking about Chitty Chitty Bang Bang at the Theatre Royal. Well, that took place last week, and to do the review, I asked Brian Capron, star of Coronation Street and, of course, Hove actor, what he thought of the show.
Well, this is a lovely show, and it's a lovely family show, and I don't know how they do it. Every time I come and see the Brighton Theatre Group, they're just so impressive. This is a big, big show to pull off. The sound, the music, the orchestra, the standard of the singing was fantastic. The company dance numbers, absolutely terrific. I mean, Jodie Michelle, she's just a terrific choreographer, and they're so lucky to have her. And Michael, the director, he's done a wonderful job. There's an awful lot of people to move around, and it's done effortlessly. It's such a lovely show. The theatre was packed. The audience absolutely loved this show. It's such a heartwarming show. And I'm just absolutely stunned by the sheer quality of what they've pulled off here tonight. And it was a real pleasure to come and see all these people. And I said to them, this is a special night that will stay with them forever, because it's not just about the audience and the theatre. It's about their special experience that they've had, which will stay with them forever, I think.
And you're no stranger to the theatre yourself, so did you wish you were up there playing Crackers?
Well, yeah, it's a lovely part to play. I would love to have played it. I think I'm a bit too old now, unfortunately, but it's a lovely part. I'd love to have had a go at it when I was a little bit younger. I'm not really a musical theatre person, although I seem to be doing musical theatre a lot these last few years. But I'd probably have to play the dad, I think, and of course I'd naturally be cast as the child catcher.
Of course, of course.
But who knows? I've just earlier in the year I did a musical called Doctor Doolittle, and they put out Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, so I might be putting it out in a couple of years' time. So who knows? Might be playing Dad, I would think, or
the grandpa,
Chuck.
Or
the granddad. Yeah, the dad. The dad.
But the flying car as well.
That was true. What a beautiful piece of equipment. I mean, that's another thing about Brighton Theatre Group. The costumes were stunning. I think they have all the original stuff. They have all the original props, the scenery, the costumes. Absolutely staggering. And the funny thing is about so-called amateur theatre is that you can get so many bodies on that stage and it fills the theatre. It's wonderful because you couldn't afford to have that many. I mean, I've just done a big show and I think we had about 20-odd people in it, and that's massive. You know, these days, normally you're doing a show with 4 or 5 people in it or something, and some dancers, maybe 8 of those or something. But that's what they do so well. I mean, they know what they're doing. That's the thing. They're in the hands of a fantastic production. Right the way from Keith Shepherd, who's the producer. He gets these wonderful people together. You've got a wonderful MD, Carl the MD. He's done a wonderful job with their voices. And that's another thing. I think the singing standard was just terrific. And also, it's very interesting that I'd forgotten that Ian Fleming wrote this originally. You kind of think, oh, Ian Fleming, you know, wow, that's... A new Bond film's about to come out, you know, so I had no idea that he'd written this. And then Roald Dahl actually added to it and did the script for the film, which the musical is based on. So you've got a lot of Roald Dahl kind of stuff in this, which is a little bit dark, a little bit funny. There's lots of little twists in it that he's probably put in there. So that gives it an added lift as well.
And Roland Emmett from Ditchling, of course, is involved in the creation of the machinery.
Yes, of course. Yes, and that was very important. I mean, he did all the machinery in the film and everything. Yeah, absolutely.
So, a success for Brighton Theatre Group.
It's a big success. No, this is quite a unique experience, and to fill this theatre and have that wonderful atmosphere, which theatres, you know, it's a unique experience, and everyone's loved it tonight, and I've loved it.
Brian, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Now to something completely different, because it came to our notice that an organisation called Strike a Light, which are based in the open market off London Road in Brighton, have got a new project for audio memories, and they're asking for people to come along and talk about the Royal Sussex County Hospital. And I met up with Nicola Benge from Strike a Light and first asked her what this new project was all about.
We've been developing a National Heritage Lottery funded project in partnership with Brighton and Sussex University Hospitals and an organisation called Nimbus to really explore and record memories around all of the Brighton and Sussex hospitals, the history, the people who work there, patients, the technological changes, and obviously a really key thing, the introduction of the NHS. Since July, we've come on board to record 30 to 50 oral history interviews with people across the city and beyond, actually, who've got some experience of the hospitals in that capacity. We've already recorded about six, so we've still got quite a way to go, but we really are looking for more people who want to be interviewed. If you had a baby at the hospital, if you have worked there especially, if you remember any sort of technological changes, because obviously, you know, x-rays have really developed and radiography. But we really want to just encourage people to get in touch with us and share their stories.
Any particular kind of people?
No, really anyone that's had some kind of relationship with Brighton and Sussex University Hospitals, or as it was known, the Royal Sussex University Hospital, because obviously it's a teaching hospital too.
So not including places like Bevendean or the Brighton General?
We don't include Brighton General because it's not part of the NHS Trust. I'm a layperson, so I must say I don't know why that is. But that's the fund that was applied for by the hospital was for the Trust, really. So it's any hospitals in the Trust. So that includes the Alexandra, the Children's Hospital, that includes the Eye Hospital, that includes any of the maternity units, that includes the one in Hayward's Heath, I should remember the name of
the Princess Royal.
The Princess Royal, yes. So anything that's linked to BSUH, we are interested in memories from. No matter whether you've been a porter or you've worked in the kitchens or you've worked in radiography, whatever it is, you know, we want to know your stories.
I mean, particularly talking about the Royal Sussex County Hospital, yeah. It is undergoing major changes at the moment, yeah. But not for the first time, because a new kidney unit and of course the Royal Alex is there from the previous site in Dyke Road. So are you interested in memories from the previous site of the Royal Alex?
Oh, definitely, yes, we really are. The hospital got funding for this project specifically because of the huge amount of development and building work that's going on at the hospital at present. It was really a way for them to sort of capture and archive memories that are being lost as part of this big development. And one of the things that's going to happen that Nimbus are working on is they're working on a huge piece of artwork called The Crucible. And then that's going to be in the main part of the foyer of the new wing of the hospital when that opens. And our role within this project is to collect these memories. One of the things we're going to be doing is on the 7th of September, and we're going to be at Jubilee Library, and we're going to be doing a Vox Pops Day where we really encourage people to come in and share their memories. So we've had people say to us, oh, I don't have enough memories for an hour-long interview. So what we thought is we'd have a day where people can just drop in and say, I've got 5 minutes spare, and this happened to me at the hospital, or I was born at the hospital, or I spent some time in the Royal Alex, or whatever it is. And then they can just drop in and share their memories between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. on Saturday the 7th of September at Jubilee Library. And we can record those, and that can be part of our archive.
So how do you record it? Is it like we're doing now with the interviewer in your kitchen?
Yes, pretty much. So what we do is we either go to someone's home, if that's what they prefer, or they can come to our studio, which is on the balcony upstairs at Brighton Open Market, just off London Road, to record it there. Or we can also record at the hospital. So one of those three options, really. We're pretty flexible. And they normally take 1 to 2 hours from start to finish, including setup and pack down. But the technical process really is we have a Zoom recorder that has inbuilt mics, and we use those. And we just work through a sort of series of open questions, really, about working at the hospital or being a patient at the hospital or anywhere in between.
And is it easy to find people? Because some people might be reluctant to share a hospital experience if it's a bad one.
Yes, exactly. And we've actually had a few people say they want to be interviewed and then at the last minute change their mind. I don't think because of anything we've done. I think maybe because they've thought about it and thought, I don't know if I want to share that memory. Obviously, if anyone has a difficult memory, we would refer them to the patient's liaison service at the hospital so that they can talk anything like that through. Obviously, that's not our role. Our role is to capture experiences and memories, but we have had some people come forward, but we want more, you know, because so many people have an experience with the hospital, for good or for bad, and also because it's one of the city's biggest employers. So really the idea is the more people we have come through who have worked there, no matter in what capacity, the better for us and the better for capturing that history. And those interviews will be sent to the Keep Archive, the County Archive for Brighton and Hove and East Sussex, and be lodged there as part of a wider archive for the hospital. So you're really contributing to a key piece of local history.
And how can people find out more?
You can go to our website, which is strikealight.org, strikealight.org, or you can email, which is strikealight@rocketmail.com. So those are probably the two best ways to do it. If you're on Facebook, our Vops Pops Day is on Facebook on our website. So you can just go to our Facebook site, which is Strike Alight Arts and Heritage. Or you can pop by to our balcony studio at the open market. So there's lots of different ways to get in touch.
Nicola, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's really nice to meet you, Chris.
That was Nicola Benge from Strike Alight. And if you've got some audio memories, please contact them on www.strikealight.org. And that's where we must leave this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme that's produced for Brighton's only truly local radio station, Radio Reverb, by Grey Matters Productions. For more information on other matters that we've touched on in this programme, for example, the pension scams, go to www.fca.org.uk/scamsmart, all one word. And for details on how you can keep you and your family safe in, on and under the water, go to www.rnli, that's Royal National Lifeboat Institution.org. We are Grey Matters Productions, and if you visit our website at www.greymattersproductions.org.uk, you can listen again to a selection of our most recent programmes. And at this point, I must again thank my executive producer, Richard Davis, for all the technical details. And of course, Richard will be here with another edition of At Home This Morning in just 2 weeks' time. But now the clock on the wall tells me it's time for me to go. And so until we meet again over the airwaves in about 4 weeks' time, this is Chris English signing off as usual with the slogan, make sure you keep safe and not too warm. Bye for now.